His Hands and His Feet, an Easter sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
Dear sinner, dear doubter, dear skeptic, see His hands and feet. The forgiveness of my sin lies in the hands and the feet of the crucified and risen Jesus.
And we'll send you a CD of this sermon for any size gift during the Easter season. Make a secure online donation today, issuesetc.org. Thanks for thinking of us during the 50 days of Easter.
The court definitely sees the problems that the policy of the university poses to force a Bible study group to be led by someone who doesn't believe in the Bible.
There's no reason for a public university or law school to subsidize discrimination.
He takes evil and overcomes evil with good. And if you have any questions about that, you look at Good Friday.
If the government can pass a law saying that you have to have a national day of prayer and the president has to give a proclamation, well, then the government could encourage citizens to fast during Ramadan.
My wife was deposed in that lawsuit not too long ago. But is it going to change anything? Absolutely not.
Florida truck drivers, love issues, etc.
Well, it's been a long tradition, a discipline. The Bible would say that rightly received, it is a gift of celibacy. Jesus talks about celibacy very briefly at one point. Of course, he himself practiced this, never married, obviously chaste. Does that make it the standard for all who serve in Christ's office in the church, whether we call them priests or pastors? Is there any warrant and merit to the long tradition in some of Christendom and for, we got to admit, before the Reformation, for centuries in almost all of Christendom, for priestly celibacy? We're going to be talking about priestly celibacy, not only not marrying, but, and it's become a problem in the last 50 years, remaining chaste and celibate. Dr. Martin Nolan joins us here for the first half hour of this Wednesday afternoon's Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. It is Wednesday afternoon, April the 28th. We are coming to you live, and you can join us for the next 2 hours. Our call-in number 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Talkback at issuesetc.org is our in-studio email address, or you can Twitter us at issuesetc. After our conversation with Martin Noland, Dr. David Adams of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis joins us to talk about the alleged discovery of Noah's Ark. Then, in the second hour, Tony Loinger is going to join us from Oklahomans for Life. There are two new abortion laws in Oklahoma that have overcome the governor's veto. We'll see what they have to say. Reasonable restrictions on abortion in Oklahoma. Aaron Wolf will join us for the remainder of the program to talk about effeminate Christianity. Has your church, your congregation, been not just feminized, perhaps emasculated? What does feminism have to do with it? Or does it have anything to do with it? Aaron Wolf of Chronicles Magazine will be our guest. 1-877-623-MYIE. Talk back at issuesetc.org or Twitter us at issuesetc. Oh, by the way, in advance of that conversation with Aaron Wolf, you can visit our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, and leave a comment there as well as read his article on effeminate Christianity, facebook.com/issuesetc. Dr. Martin Nolan is a regular guest, pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Evansville, Indiana, formerly served as the director of the Concordia Historical Institute. Marty, welcome back.
Good to be here.
Speculate, if you would, on any possible connection there might be between the practice of priestly celibacy and the recent and now long-running scandals of priestly abuse in the Roman Catholic Church.
Well, the first issue, it is a scandal because the bishops have not properly been dealing with it. So that is, I don't know the recent history on their policies, whether it's stated policy or not, and that's why the current pope is in so much trouble. He was involved, apparently, allegedly, in some of these type of cases where people that had been accused or proven to be involved in this sort of relationship of sexual abuse with minors that he passed the priest on instead of disbarring him. So in terms of the administrative issues, it's probably a more recent issue. And I don't know the history on that. But in terms of the connection between priestly celibacy and, would you say, the sexual abuse of minors, any sort of sexual relation outside of marriage relation, this has been a problem going way, way back. And it was complained about at the time of the Reformation. It was one of the issues that almost everybody agreed on that needed to be dealt with. And the question was, how do you deal with it? And the reformers said, get rid of mandatory celibacy. And there were many Roman Catholics at the time in the 15th and 16th century that agreed with the reformers on this. But eventually the Council of Trent upheld the traditional standard that had gone at back several centuries, and it's never changed ever since. So since that was first mandated, which goes back to the 12th century, there has been continued problems with priests that do not uphold what their standard is, and that is no sexual relations at all. They're not able to do that, and it has always been a problem.
Let's talk about the history of priestly celibacy. You mentioned some dates there. How old is the practice itself?
Well, we first need to go back to, we might get the impression it goes all the way back, because the defenders of priestly celibacy will claim that it goes back to Jesus and that the church has done it all the time. And it's very clear, as you said, Jesus himself was celibate, never married. He obviously knew what his mission was, and it was a very short time on earth. Peter, we know from Mark chapter 1, verse 30, was married. He had a mother-in-law. It was one of Jesus' first miracles to heal her. Paul reports that the other apostles, and presumably that would mean the majority of them, in 1 Corinthians 9, verse 5, also had wives and did not divorce them, becoming apostles. We also know from lists of the early church, before the time of the Council of Nicaea, there's a 3rd century list of bishops in France indicating that they're married and have children. And in the 4th century, we know that, for example, St. Hilary of Poitiers, the father of Pope Damasus I, Pope Felix III, and Pope Hermisdas. These are 4th century bishops. All are married and have children. So the practice was, before the rise of monasticism, the practice was that some pastors were married and some were not, just like the Protestants practice today. The First Council of Nicaea in 325, when the Nicene Creed was first adopted, considered an overture that had been brought to have all clergy divorce their wives and become celibate, but that was rejected. So there was already at that time some people who believed that to be a good Christian or a good Christian leader, you had to remain celibate and have no wives, but that was rejected at that time. The development really begins with Christian monasticism, which is the 3rd and 4th century. St. Antony the Great was a hermit monk in Egypt, and there were several others in the 4th century where you see the beginning of monasticism. And after that, as the monks begin to be involved with the church, they begin to say, you know, maybe those clergy guys, they should be celibate like us too. So there is a good 3 or 4 centuries of debate about this. And one of the solutions was that priests could be married, but they couldn't have sexual relations with their wives. Now, you know how well that would go over both with the husband and with the wife. And about the same time, about the 6th century, I believe it was Justinian I, the emperor, laid down the law that the bishops would not be, you could not become a bishop if you had children or grandchildren, and the wives would be put in a nunnery. So that's where the Eastern Orthodox practice of bishops only being celibate and unmarried or not having wives, that dates from that early date. So the practice of celibacy for bishops goes back to the 6th century. It's very early. The practice of all clergy being is not something that is found in the Eastern churches. It's only found in the Roman Catholic Church, and that began with the Cluny Reform in the 10th century, where the monks of Cluny basically took over all the power in the church, and they wanted all the clergy to be like them. And so in the First and Second Lateran Council, that's 1123 and 1139, the canons or laws were passed forbidding all clerical marriage, and any marriages that were in existence were dissolved and the children were turned into orphans. And so from 1139, ever since, in the Roman Catholic Church, no priests have been allowed to be married or to have relations in any way.
The issue of how mandatory this is often comes up in modern day conversation about it. It will be claimed, well, it's a discipline, it's a gift, it is, but it's not mandatory. It's often made the claim. Is that true? We've got about 30 seconds before our break.
It's mandatory in the sense that you won't be ordained a priest. It's a qualification that has to be there. There are exceptions made for people that are pastors coming from other denominations, and there are dispensations made. But the standard rule is, especially if you're Roman Catholic, you cannot become a priest unless you're single and intend to remain so.
Dr. Martin Noland is our guest. 10 more minutes with him on the other side of the break on this Wednesday afternoon, April the 28th. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the celibacy of priests. I invite your questions and your comments, a topic current today given the priestly scandal of abuse. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943, talkback at issuesetc.org. That's our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. You can Twitter us at @issuesetc. Dr. Martin Noland is pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Evansville, Indiana, formerly served as director of the Concordia Historical Institute. In 1521, at the Diet of Worms, Martin Luther was asked to recant his writings. Luther responded, "Unless I am convinced from the sacred scriptures that I am in error, I cannot and will not recant. Here I stand. I cannot do otherwise. God help me. Amen." Will you stand with us as we proclaim these Reformation truths in the 21st century? You can take your stand by becoming a monthly or annual contributor to Issues, etc. To find out how you can become an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron, check out the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Just look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Help us proclaim the solas of the Reformation, Scripture, faith, grace, and Christ alone. Here we stand, Issues Etc. and you.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
If you're interested in hanging around with a bunch of powerful men that further one another's careers, I guess you could meet Fred and Barney down at the Loyal Order of Water Buffalo. Stress is your problem, and those 40, 50 hours a week are killing you, and that cubicle's driving you nuts. Perhaps you should buy Joel Osteen's book and read it. If you're interested in Lutheran doctrine and practice and how we can spread that to our community, check us out. Brothers of John the Steadfast, www.steadfastlutherans.com.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. What kind of questions or comments do you have about the celibacy of priests? Our call-in number live this Wednesday afternoon, the 28th of April, 1-877-623-6943. 1-877-623-MYIE. Email your questions or comments to us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or Twitter us at issuesetc. Dr. Martin Noland is our guest. So let's make the case on the other side. If we can talk about that this is not as often claimed by the advocates of mandatory celibacy, that this goes all the way back to Jesus and the apostles. That's the case you've made already historically. Let's make the case on the other side that it is not only permissible, but there, a biblical case can be made for the clergy to marry if they wish.
Well, there's a number of Bible passages, and these are they're talked about in the Lutheran confessions that deal with this. So those of our readers that have the Book of Concord can read the whole discussion and how Lutherans understand that. That would be Augsburg Confession, Article 23, Apology 23, and Smalcald Articles 3, Section 11. The main passages, we start with Jesus in Matthew 19, verse 3 to 12, where he was asked about divorce by the Pharisees. And he gives a general teaching about marriage, not just about clergy. So that has to be understood to be marriage in general for everyone. And then when the apostles or the disciples ask him if it's okay, if it's better not to marry at all, Jesus responds to them with that in verse 11 and says, not all people can accept this precept, or that is the rule of celibacy. So what the church in the Roman Catholic Church has tried to do is to force all people that accept orders of any sort in that church to accept celibacy, and that's contrary to the teaching of Jesus, right there, Matthew 19:11. Another place where the Bible talks generally about marriage is the great chapter of 1 Corinthians 7. Paul talks about marriage for everyone, again, not just for clergy. And in verse 2 there, Paul says that every man should have a wife because of temptation, the temptation to immorality. And then he goes on in verse 5 and says, if a husband and wife decide to withhold relations from each other, it should only be for a short time because of the temptation to immorality. So it should not be perpetual. Verse 9 says it's better to marry than to be ablaze with passion. And finally, verse 35, at the end of that chapter, where Paul has talked about people that have lost their spouses, he advises them maybe it's better to stay single, but he is not placing restriction on them. In other words, a command. He's just kind of giving a counsel that they should think about it and not rush rashly into a second or third marriage after the loss of their first. So nobody could use 1 Corinthians 7 as based on verse 35 as a command for any class of people to be celibate. Another passage that is used is 1 Timothy chapter 3 and 4. In this case, Paul is talking about clergy. In 1 Timothy 3, 2, it says that a bishop should be married only once, and there's some debate exactly what does that mean, but it does mean that he's married. Then 1 Timothy 4, verse 1 to 3, Paul says that the doctrine that forbids marriage is a doctrine of the devil. Now, if there's anything that is strong from the Bible against the doctrine of clerical celibacy, that verse is it, 1 Timothy 4, 1 to 3. And finally, 1 Timothy 4, verse 5 is used by our Lutheran confessors to note that even if sexual relations are impaired in this world because of sin, they are consecrated by prayer, and that meaning that at the wedding we ask God to bless the marriage, and thereby the work of the husband and wife in their relations is sanctified and becomes good and useful in God's sight. So those are the primary passages that are quoted by Lutherans against clerical celibacy, mandatory clerical celibacy.
Is part of it a kind of an approach to marriage and the sexual union in general? That is, somehow, and I speak here kind of narrowly about the Roman Catholic Church, the gold standard is complete celibacy, lifelong celibacy for everyone. But you make a compromise here and there. And so we'll permit, say, the laity to marry. It's kind of an natural necessity as well. But even then, and I've heard arguments like this, even then within marriage, perhaps abstinence is the gold standard. But because, you know, you're going to be tempted, you can go ahead and occasionally engage in the sexual union, almost as though celibacy is the moral high ground and anything else is a compromise. Do you hear some of that in the reasoning around mandatory celibacy for priests?
Well, much of it's based on tradition and law, and, you know, they'll simply say canon law says, and that's the way it is, which when they say that, that does mean that it is open for discussion. So, I mean, it is a possibility, you know, with all the pressure that's now being applied personally on this current pope, he may have to come up with some sort of solution and make some changes. And this will be interesting to see what he does, because in other cases, the pope could often, you know, pass it on to somebody else and say, well, that's your problem, and, you know, we'll figure it out some other way. But now he has been at least implicated. I don't know if he's been convicted of some responsibility for this in particular cases. So, you know, it's something that the church, the Roman Catholic Church, could change. And as I said before, in the Reformation, there were some strong voices, not Lutheran voices, but strong voices that said that we maybe should permit clerks to or clerics to marry. This included Pope Pius II, who ruled from 1458 to 1464. So that is, you know, that's less than 100 years before Luther, where the Pope is saying, hey, this is not working out. Our priests are, you know, they're not being chaste, and we've got concubines and every other sort of horrible thing. Let's go back to where the priests can marry. So I think there's a possibility they might do that. We'll have to see. We'll have to watch. They won't do it, though, because everybody's forcing them to do it. I think it's kind of like the Missouri Synod during World War I. Most of the churches did not drop German during World War I. Afterwards, after all the pressure was off, they said, maybe we'll drop German now, if you understand what I'm saying.
Helen in Austin, Texas asks this. Since the Book of Concord, though very briefly, speaks of the celibate state as a higher calling than married, what has been the history of celibate clergy in the Lutheran Church? She asks also, is the present-day bias against it just another anti-Roman Catholic attitude? Let's take our first question before. Do the confessions speak of celibacy as a higher calling than marriage?
I'm not aware of that. I think that everything that I've read indicates that there are people that have that gift and ability, but it doesn't mean that it's a higher state. It's like, oh, well, some people have the gift of playing baseball, and some people have the gift of running a long-distance run. It doesn't mean that one is higher than the other. It's just that you have that ability, which not everybody has, and therefore, you know, you can do some things that other people can't do. So to make it a higher status, and that's probably been the mistake of the Christian church, is to think that persons with particular abilities have a higher status, and that's certainly not indicated at all in Scripture, and I certainly can't find it in the Book of Concord.
Then her second question is, do you think that the present-day bias against priestly celibacy is just another anti-Roman Catholic attitude? About a minute here, Marty.
I don't think so. I don't think it's anti-Roman Catholic. I think it's just understanding human nature. I had a good friend in high school who was Roman Catholic, and he really wanted to be a priest, and he was debating whether he wanted to have a family. And it wasn't so much the sexual issues, but he wanted to have kids someday and to grow up in a normal family, and eventually gave up his career option of becoming a priest. Instead, he became a Roman Catholic high school teacher and coach, and does very well with that, I might say. So, I mean, I think people look at what happens when you try to enforce it over a large group of people, and it just doesn't work. And this is what the church has said, even as early as Pope Pius II in 1458.
Dr. Martin Nolan is pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Evansville, Indiana. Dr. Nolan formerly served as director of the Concordia Historical Institute. Marty, it's always a pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for inviting me. Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to spend the second half hour today talking with Dr. David Adams. You might have heard the news, the alleged discovery of Noah's Ark. Well, this isn't the first time that there have been artifacts discovered that some would like to have linked with Noah's Ark. What do we know about the Ark itself, its final resting place? Is it even likely that it would still be intact or in pieces someplace? What would it mean if there were remains of the Ark found that would substantiate what the Bible has to say about not only the boat itself, but the man who built it and the flood that surrounded it? We'll talk about all of those things on the other side of the break. It's Wednesday afternoon, April the 28th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Our call-in number for the next 90 minutes of the program, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Talk back at issuesetc.org or Twitter us at issuesetc. You know, I think of myself as just ordinary red-blooded American man. I don't know what I would do without my wife and my kids. Celibacy for me was, I'll just be honest with you, never an option. And I can say as a pastor, even more so, I don't know what I would do without my wife and my kids. Marriage has been good for me in both ways. Very good, in fact. When we come back, Noah's Ark, Dr. David Adams. Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
Real Reformation Radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
The Nebraska State Legislature is leading the way this year in passing pro-life legislation. Their governor recently signed two important bills. One basically prohibits abortion after 20 weeks because the baby can feel pain. The second requires a woman going in for an abortion first to be extensively screened for potential physical and mental health problems. She also must be told nobody can make her have an abortion. Many women have reported being forced or coerced into killing their unborn child. These bills are also important because they challenge abortion on demand in creative ways. Only cold and heartless pro-abortion activists and the abortion industry itself would say no to protecting babies from pain and safeguarding women's physical and mental health. But expect court challenges. I'll keep you posted.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.